And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm here, so.
I'm Shea Gibbs-Alexander, and I'm down to dunk.
Howdy, Oklahoma.
My name is Chet Holmgren, and I'm down to dunk.
Dead gum.
I'm Josh Giddey, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort,
and I'm down to dunk.
Is that like you eat them together?
Everybody tells him to get the bag of burgers.
I need like a straw, like.
Howdy. I'm an artist on the court.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
My name is Kenrich Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
It might be Aaron Wiggins.
This is a troll. It's a troll. I'm trolling.
Howdy, Papa.
Because I think it would take away from who he is, you know? Yeah.
I love Oklahoma. I love Oklahoma to death.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Perfect. Good. Very good.
I like the hat.
You like the hat?
Vava.
This is J-Dub, and I'm down to dunk. I've been doing a lot of dunking.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always on Mondays, is my good friend, Michele Barra. Michele, what's up?
I really hate daylight saving time when it's basically 3 weeks apart from my own one starting. That's bad.
It's so weird. That's the thing that most people don't even know is that worldwide, it's not even the same. And it's not cool. It's not cool.
It messes up big time.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Something else that's messed up big time is Jalen Williams' ankle, which he turned twice during the game. Once at midcourt, and then once with one of those stupid cameraman injuries. We don't really know his status. This is what Mark told us right after the game. So a lot of times during how this works sometimes during the press conferences is if there's something for sure that the coach knows that we're going to ask him, he'll just go ahead and answer it he'll just go ahead and say it as he sits down. And so right as Mark sat down, he said, "Dub right ankle sprain. We'll see how it looks in the morning." And so that's all that we know. It's an off day today for the Thunder. So there's no practice. There's no shoot around. There's no availability. So it's unlikely that we'll get an update on him until shoot around tomorrow. So if you're sitting around waiting for an update, if it really is just an ankle sprain, then we probably won't get an update until tomorrow. So usually the Thunder's not going to put out an update on the team on injuries just randomly, unless they update, which I haven't checked this yet, but unless they're updating the injury report itself for tomorrow's game against the Pacers, which they don't have to until tomorrow. So my guess is that they won't. Not submitted yet. So my guess, we'll find out tomorrow. I would guess that he would miss tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
Is
there a reason to rush him back?
I mean, not really. The Pacers are not a bad team. They're a bad defensive team, but like they showed last night that they can really get it going offensively, even without Ben Mathurin, maybe especially without Ben Mathurin at times. So I don't know. We'll see. No reason to rush him back. I'd love to see him back for the game against the Mavericks because I think it's just kind of an important game. Not that it's an important game for like this Thunder team this season. I think it's kind of an important game for the narrative of all of this. And perhaps it's maybe even something that would go in Shea's favor if they beat the Mavs without J-Dub and Shea has an opportunity to go for like 50 on national television on Thursday night. you know, but I do think winning that game would be helpful for the narrative, for the MVP narrative specifically, is all I, all I would have to say.
Yeah, and also J-Dub is a serviceable defender against Luka, which always helps to have multiple bodies that you can play against them.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Pacers, yes, you can make use of them. Like, of course, they have a lot of wings, and having another one, it's better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, it's probably one game where you will miss the offensive power. You will have to rely on Kaysen, maybe a little bit more on Gordon Hayward, which is not the end of the world, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I saw Gordon's shot leaving his fingertips yesterday, I said, why the hell are you shooting this little from three? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, if I have that kind of shot, I will probably take, like, I don't know, 15 threes a game?
I know. I was talking to somebody that was saying that they had watched a lot of Gordon shooting threes, practicing shooting threes, and they said every one of them just, like, drops in. Just like, boom, just, like, drops. I mean, it's like, perfect. Like, a Gordon Hayward swish is just different than most anybody else's swish three.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's opportunity there. We saw Kaysen Wallace go off against the Grizzlies yesterday, or the kind of Grizzlies yesterday.
Yeah, we just spoiler for the guys who are also subscribed on the OKC team. I just spent the last 25 minutes speaking about a player that shoots the ball really well. But
yeah.
I mean, last night Kaysen was awesome.
He was good.
Like, he was just very good defensively, intense. It was, and on offense, I mean, sometimes we missed how good he is.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think that OKC fails in giving him as many shots as he can take. Sometimes he hides a little bit. And seeing what he becomes after this first rookie season, it's actually interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's shooting the ball really well. And it's not a fluke anymore. Like, this guy can really shoot it and can really pick his spots. And I think that something that we really can appreciate about Kaysen is that he always makes himself available on the court in areas that are extremely valuable. Like, mm-hmm. he's always in the right time, in the right spot, in the corner, ready to catch. And sometimes, like, players like J-Dub, for example, or even Lu Dort, they don't like to be there as much, whereas Kaysen seems to be perfectly fine in getting that spot and letting it fly. And he was doing it in a very decisive and quick way, which helps everybody. Granted, as you mentioned, it was sort of the Grizzlies. I mean, that team is basically the G League version of the Grizzlies, which, I mean, of course, JJJ played, Santi Aldama played.
There's just nobody set any of those guys up. I mean, they just didn't have one perimeter player to set anybody up. It was like their whole, I mean, that's the whole problem. Like, you have a Luke Kennard on the perimeter who needs to be set up. I mean, I guess those are the only guard that played in the starting lineup, like Laravia, Santi Aldama. I mean, they're playing this, like, point guardless lineup. They really don't even have a point guard on their team, period. Like, the guys that come off the bench, like Lamar Stevens is handling a lot, you know? Dejan Giroux. Did you know Dejan Giroux before that game?
I admittedly never, ever read that name in my entire life.
Trey Jameson, who I only know because I watched the Grizzlies a couple of weeks ago for like 55. Yeah, for like 7 seconds on accident. I mean, it's rough in Memphis, and they just have nobody to organize the offense at all. And it may, like, Triple J doing the best he can.
Yeah.
GG Jackson's just like, it's time to cook, baby. Like, let's.
Yeah, but he did it in I would say not horrible way.
I think he looked great. Compared to what I thought he would be. I mean, you look at it, his stat line looks great. 36-3. He had a block. He looks athletic. You know, he's playing well. You have to be you have to be pretty excited about him. Like, the fact that you found Vince Williams Jr., sucks that he's injured. He's actually somebody that could help set you up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then GG Jackson, who knows? Like, what is he on a team that wins 50 games? You know, I don't know.
A guy who plays for the G League team?
Yeah, probably. Likely. because, I mean, he's not going to take 19 shots. He took 10 threes last night. God bless him. Shout out GG Jackson.
The thing that I liked the most about GG was that he was actually pointing to his teammates where to be on the court, and he was mostly right, which, you know, it's kind of sad. Like, if GG Jackson has to point you where to be, and he's a rookie, not just trying to say that anything bad about GG, but like, if a rookie needs to point to you where to be on the court, your team is kind of messed up.
Yeah.
Which Memphis is kind of. I mean, they had a horrible season, and I mean, sometimes you have a horrible season when Wemby is the first pick in the draft, and sometimes it's when Alex Saar is a first round pick in the draft. Which, you know, it's not the best year to have a bad year, because the reward is not really there.
Yeah, it's true. I don't want to like take away too much from this Grizzlies game, because there's just you shouldn't, because they play. I mean, the game was over. It was like 13-3, and like, you can just call it over, you know, right there.
Yeah.
As it was 13-3 with 8 minutes left in the game, in the first quarter. It's just like, that's the end. I mean, Shea's hitting threes, like, you're toast anyways. But, you know, I thought that
I kind of like that, by the way.
What do you think? He took seven threes in 27 minutes.
Nice.
He's been taking them more.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I think it's a really good thing. And he's been making them too. I mean, you look at what he's done over the last, I mean, since the All-Star break, what do you think he's shooting from three?
41.7.
Since the All-Star break. 40. Did you look this up already? Because that sounds like...
I swear I did not.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I just need a little honesty test. He's actually 44.2.
Okay. I was kind of far away. I thought it was I was closer.
He's taken 43 threes in 10 games. So
that's not good enough, but trending in the right direction.
Yeah. It's not quite good enough.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, who do you think is shooting the best from three since the All-Star break on the team?
Lugens Dort.
Shooting 50%. He's taken 54 threes.
That's, I mean, he had some very dumb threes yesterday.
He made all of them.
He's making them. He's making them. I mean, one of the threes was so good. Like, he barely moved the net. Not that I would really know all the time, because my stream sometimes becomes like very big squares. Can I rant a little bit about that? Yeah. Like, just 10 seconds?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is I'm sure that this is an NBA app problem. I mean, I can stream it very well on any device that requires AirPlay. But if I stream it to the other Android with the Chromecast stream, it's horrible. It stops every 5 seconds.
Yikes.
It's a terrible viewing experience.
That's not cool.
So the one that I saw... barely moving the net.
Yeah. Dort's been great. And I talked to Mark about it last night, and I talked to Lou about it last night, and he just talked more about how he went into the off season, watched a ton of tape with his trainer, and decided before the season, I'm gonna stop taking all these stupid shots.
Yeah.
And he's a almost 41% three-point shooter on the whole season. You know, I don't necessarily think that's indicative of, like, the quality of shooter that he is. I think a lot of it is the quality of shots that he's getting, you know, and the fact that he has consistently hit corner threes, and he's taken more corner threes this season. And so, you know, it's a credit to him, because a lot of guys don't shoot up to their potential because they do take a lot of just bad or ill-advised threes, you know. And Dort did that in the past, and it really hurt his percentages. But now, I think he's just in the exact role for him, like the perfect role for him, where it's, you're a 3-and-D wing, like that's what you are, and he's been one of the best 3-and-D wings in the NBA, period. Like, there's not a lot of guys that have been much better than him.
Yeah, and there are moments where you can really feel that Lu Dort is about to destroy you defensively. And those moments brings so much excitement to the entire team. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is something that I think I lost about him last season completely. I mean, and even the season before, said, like, what is this guy in the future? Like, a guy that is not as good as he was defensively. He seems that he is, like, changing his own agenda. I mean, the first year was like, yeah, I am the guy who's guarding James Harden and winning with my threes, open, wide open threes, daring me to shoot, and I actually almost win a playoff series. To the guy who started becoming like inefficient offensive hub, mm-hmm. and then in a blink of an eye, basically, because like 4 months of an offseason is a blink of an eye, he changed completely. I will not take any victory lap. I was completely against believing that would happen. Mm-hmm. And instead, he makes this change, this real change. And yes, there are games. There have been probably 6 games, maybe even 4 games, where he kind of reverted back to what he was in a season. That is impressive.
Yeah.
That means that for more than 55 games in a season, he was the perfect version of himself.
Yeah.
And again, I think that, yes, the shooting is extremely important. Extremely. But it's not as contagious as its defense. There are moments where you can just feel the entire team loading up because Lu Dort just made like a fantastic, fantastic point of attack defense that nobody could even anticipate. And that is the thing that I think could change a playoff series, a playoff moment. When Lu Dort is like that on defense, it's just a different level.
Yeah, there was a moment last night against Memphis where it was he and Case and Wallace that were, they were just like, yeah, you're Luke Kennard, you're not going to get this ball. Like, you're not, this is not going to happen for you tonight. And they just ended it. And it's, and I think it does start with Lou. And as Lou kind of like revs up, you have guys like Case and Wallace out there with him. It's like, oh my gosh. Like, there's nothing more terrifying for most teams, especially a team that doesn't really have a point guard, you know, than those two at point of attack. Because I think the Thunder have one of the best point of attack defenses in the NBA this season. And a lot of it is Lou. And the fact that they can just carry it over with Kaysen off the bench. Like, it just, you can have it to where it just never stops, which I think is really important. And will be really important for the playoffs specifically to have two guys like that that can come in and defend the guys at the point of attack and be really effective and make threes. You know, Kaysen made 4 of 6 from three. Dort was 4 of 4 from three. Like, you have to guard those guys. And so I think it's really important, you know, for those two to be, I mean, they're key role players for this team. So I'm just extremely impressed with both of those guys. And I think the Thunder have a bright future, obviously, and it's because of Shea and J-Dub and Chet. But to already have role players that just like fit so perfectly, and to draft one that is on his first year of his rookie deal, that could end up being like, it could end up getting a lot better. Like, I don't know how much better Dort gets from here. He's still only 24. It's not like the dude's like 27, 28. And it's like, yeah, this is who he is. Like, he could still get better from here. But Kaysen's got a little bit more passing chops. He's got a little bit more ball handling chops than Dort does. And so you don't ever really want to limit what a player can be in the future. But you watch Kaysen Wallace and see some of the stuff he was doing in the fourth quarter. And most of it, I'm not going to like take to the bank. Like, I just, no. You know, you kind of view it and be like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then you kind of just put a pin in it and move on. But he has potential to be a really, really good player in the NBA. And if all he is what he is this year, and he just, you know, gets a little bit better from here, like, that's an amazing player to get a 10. But it could be better than that. He's been one of the better rookies this season, and it's because of his ability to shoot the ball and then play defense. And he plays a small role on this team with regards to usage, but boy, like, he has some potential to be, you know, one of the better players on this team at some point.
Yeah, and speaking of guys that played well yesterday, and we can say even as of late, I think that Josh Giddey is playing with a little bit more purpose,
yeah,
a little bit more energy.
Yeah,
defensively is, I mean, I would not suggest to anybody that to just even analyze a game against Memphis in general.
Mm-hmm.
But as of the past, I would say 2 weeks, Josh is playing better. He's more decisive with his passing, which is something that is clear and apparent to anybody who is watching. He's better at cutting and finding seams in the defense. He's more aggressive, especially early with his shot, well, like floaters, layups, whatever. And so I really like to see him playing that way. He has to do it on a different level for, I think, against team that plays on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see Milwaukee. We'll see Boston again. We'll see good teams here and there. And I think that he is finding a little bit of footing on how he should play, yeah, especially early on. I think that there is a purpose of the team of saying, okay, Josh, try to put yourself a little bit into this game, and we'll help you doing that. And I think that even if he plays like 22, 25 with this kind of rhythm and decisiveness offensively, I think you can still get good minutes, mm-hmm, out of the starting unit, which, by the way, was one of the best units over the past, I think, 5 to 6 games.
Yeah, I've been impressed. I don't think it's been easy for Josh. I think it's plain to say it's been hard for him this season,
yeah,
to figure out how to play with this group. I think it's been really, really tough, because he's been a player since he was a kid that was the engine of the offense. Even Team Australia, yeah, this past summer. I mean, he was Team Australia. Like, he was the engine of the offense. He was the guy who made sure that everything ran. And then he gets to this team, and it's like, not only are you not the second guy, or maybe even the third guy, but a lot of times you're going to be the fourth guy on the court when you're playing with the starters. And it's going to be pretty difficult. You know, I give him a lot of credit for one, and part of it is like, what do you do? But he hasn't been griping about it. You know, you could gripe about it behind the scenes. You could try to push yourself to another team. There's a lot of things you could do. It'd be a bad look with what's gone on with him and off the court stuff too. So I understand that he doesn't necessarily really have that option, but guys have done it and it's torpedoed their careers and made it, you know, made them players that really nobody wants. So, you know, good on him for not doing that. But he's also like, I think he is earnestly trying to figure out how to do it and how to function within, yeah, the team. And he's starting to figure some things out, and they're just not playing him quite as much, which I think is also good, because I think it allows him to kind of take smaller bites within all of this and it not be so overwhelming. You know, he played 19 minutes against the Grizzlies. Against Miami, he played 23. Portland and LA, he played 32 against Portland, 28 against LA, but 19 against Phoenix, 18 against San Antonio, 20 against the Rockets, 23 against the Rockets, 21 against the Wizards. I mean, around the 19 to 22 range is about what he has been. And I, yeah, think like that's a pretty good role for him. One, because there's a lot of good players on this Thunder team that need to play. And also, I think it can allow him to be a better rebounder, to be a guy that just gives full effort,
yeah,
especially defensively. And they've been using him a little bit differently on defense. They've been using him kind of as a low man at times. Mm-hmm. And I've liked that. You know, there was on Friday where you saw him cutting off guys in the lane and like being there on defense.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like Josh is like some elite defender and he's going to be some great defender for this team, but like he's getting better as a defender. And then he's just finding ways to function within the offense. He had that pass to Cason Wallace last night where Cason just cuts to the hoop.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
And it was just like, whoa. Like, you're starting to see some of those a little bit more here. You know, he played well in his 19 minutes. 16, 10, and 4 with two steals in 19 minutes. You know, against Miami in 23 minutes, 11, 9, and 6. Like, you're starting to see these, like, Josh Giddey-like stat lines. Against Portland, 19, 6, and 7. It's like, okay, like, that is more of the Josh Giddey that we, you know, knew. And, like, the thing is, like, the thing that kind of drives me crazy is that we have seen him be a good player. Yet so many people are ready to just eject him and just be like, we're done with him. And I've had those feelings and thoughts too, but I think we also have to ground it within, like, there's a world where he is a good player for this team and he can function within it. And it's, this team is young and it's evolving. And I think that that is just something that we need to watch for. And maybe it doesn't work. I'm open-minded enough to think that there's a world where it does and doesn't work, you know, with this team. But you can just, like, give him credit for how he's played lately, which has been pretty good. And, you know, hopefully he can start to hit a stride and maybe he hits an upward trajectory as we head toward the playoffs. You know, I don't know that will continue to happen, but I will say that I'm encouraged by what I've seen lately.
Yeah, same here. And I had similar thoughts, and I still have them in terms of who's the best guy to pair with this team. And, I mean, if you take a 6'8 guy who can shoot the basketball and play a little bit better defense without being this passing savant who Giddey is, then maybe if it's the mold a little bit better. So I'm still of the idea that as of today, it's an imperfect fit. Is he a bad player, though? No, I don't think that I share that opinion. I think that he could be good, even great, on a right setting with the ball in his hands and a lot of shooters. Mm-hmm. We mentioned San Antonio, like, a lot. Like, imagine him alongside Vassell, alongside maybe another shooter like Cody Williams, with Wemby being what Wemby is. I mean, that guy is pretty scary, having a guy who can set up the table every single action and can put you into a rhythm, which is something that Josh can really do with his play, like put the team into a rhythm. I think that that kind of player is right there. Now, can you maximize that, or can you get great minutes with him on the court? That is the question that OKC has to answer over the next 20 and change games. Yeah. I'm starting to lose the count. What are they? 46 and 19?
45 and 19. Yeah.
So there's a chunk of the season yet to play. And then you have the playoffs, the postseason. And so that is something where I think that we'll have some of the answers. And maybe it's, hey, we will stay together another summer and then we'll decide at the end of the rookie scale deal with a qualifying offer or with a standard restricted free agency offer. So it's, OKC is in no rush. They can make a decision in June 2025 for Giddey. They don't have to do it before. They are not forced to do it before.
Mm-hmm. They do like to do it before.
Yes, they do. Yes, they absolutely do.
There's a history of that. And I'll just say, I, for one, would not be shocked to see an extension get done. That's not sourced. That's not anything. It just wouldn't surprise me if they just weren't ready to cut him loose. And I know a lot of people would like to cut him loose. I get it. But I would not be surprised to see an extension. I would not be surprised.
No, I think that you are right. And suppose that is how it comes to fruition. I was very surprised about the number that Lu Dort had.
Yeah.
But if you look at it now.
Oh, it looks great now, right?
It's awesome. Yeah. It is awesome. And I think that if you do it mathematically, the Lu Dort deal for Josh would be something north of $22 million per year.
Yeah.
Something like that. If you do apple to apple, not just like, it's just translating that number, that Lu Dort's number when he signed it to today.
Yeah. For people that don't know, 15 this year, 16.5 next year, in 25, 26, 17.7, and the same 17.7 is a team option in 26, 27.
Yeah. But he signed that, in 2023.
Yeah.
Starting in 2024. So
yeah.
At the moment, we were not sure about the cap. Mm-hmm. So I think that something around 20, maybe a little bit less than 22 that I mentioned, is probably the same deal. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of scary. But it's also, hey, for Lu Dort, it was scary.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the same kind of deal where you have 3 years plus one of a team option, where you put a little bit of more money on the table, maybe with some bonus, and you start a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. Does that deal poisonous? No. Even if it's 3 years, I mean, who cares? I think that OKC has to be mindful about how they use their salary cap, because they have to. But it's also, just look at us now compared to last year when Lou signed that deal. I mean, it's night and day. It's really night and day. And it can happen. I mean, Lu Dort had a lot of deficiencies in terms of decision making and just staying into the best thing for him. And I think that Josh has similar issues. Mm-hmm. Trying to do too much, trying to be a spot-up shooter just to convince everybody that he can make a shot. Mm-hmm. When at the start of the season he said, something that Chip told him was, hey, you don't have to convince anybody that you're a shooter. And yeah. I think that sometimes during the season, he fell into that trap. So I'm not saying that Giddy next season will be as good as Dort this season, but I think that we were already wrong once about discussing an extension before that comes to fruition.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Also, the team is first in the Western Conference. they're doing some things that are right. Let's be clear about that. They're top five in both offense and defense. I mean, you had Eric Spoelstra the other night. Like I like jet it. So Mark was talking and coaches talk at specific times before the game. And Mark was still talking when it was time for Eric to just talk the other night when the Thunder played the Heat. And I like jetted out the door because I wanted to talk to Spoelstra about Mark. And is like one of those like weird like just like moments that are just so cool where I'm just like, it's so incredibly grateful that I get to do what I do. As I walked out of the media room and Eric Spoelstra's just walking down the hall. And so I'm like, not like going to like chit chat with him. It's like, he has no clue who I am, but I'm like, just like getting to like walk down the hall with Eric Spoelstra to this press conference is like, this is the dumbest thing ever. This is ridiculous. This is so great. But got to go sit down and talk to him in a press conference setting. And he just was like, man, it's like this, Mark is great. And I think it was a really interesting compliment to say, when you watch them on film and you see everything that they're doing, what they do just makes a lot of sense. You know, the way they play mm-hmm. just makes a ton of sense for their personnel. The way that not only do their superstars fit into the way that they play, but all their role players, there's room for them all to fit into the style of play. I was like, yeah, like that's a really good way to put it. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It's also a very robotic way to do it. I mean, please, Mr. Spoelstra, make a compliment to the team. It makes sense.
It makes sense.
Nice.
It is computing. That's how some of these guys are, though. Like some of these some of like the most brilliant minds in the league. Like this is how they kind of talk a little bit. I think Presti has been like somebody that's been accused of talking like that at times. And
yeah,
Mark is actually like just so he's, I really, really like Mark Degnall. Not only do I like him as like a tactician and a coach, he's just very good and he's done such a good job with this team, but he's just kind of, he's fun. He's fun to talk to. He's fun to ask questions to. I was asking him the other night after the Heat game, just about the tough shots that Shea makes. I don't know if you saw this press conference, but I asked him.
I think I did. Yeah.
I asked him, I started my question and I shouldn't have paused because the pause gave him room to like make me feel like an idiot. he was,
which he took.
Yeah, he took immediately. Oh, he took, he saw the lane and he just jetted through the lane. He cut like Aaron Wiggins cut into the hoop. I said, you know, Shea takes and makes a lot of tough shots. And I paused for just maybe half a second. He goes, wow, what a great observation. Oh, it's so good. I laughed so hard whenever I went back and rewatched it. Because a lot of times I'll go back and rewatch press conferences just to see if there's like anything good to make like a short like for on the Down to Dunk YouTube channel and whatnot. But I went back and watched that. Maybe that should be a short. Just him just embarrassing me. But I think the world of Mark Degnall. I think he's such a good coach. He's a great man of like development for this team, but I think he's also just a guy who keeps this team on the right track, you know? Because like mm-hmm. now you have this young team, they're thriving, they're first in the Western Conference, they're exceeding every expectation possible. And yet you don't, you know, they're asked about like, you guys first in the Western Conference, you think about the playoffs, they're all just like, no. Like, what are you talking about? We still have, you know, 20 games left. Like, why would I think about the playoffs right now? That's all Mark directed, you know?
Yeah.
Us like immature people watching the game are just like, can't stop thinking about the playoffs. Every single week on this show, we're like, all right, playoff matchups. Which one do you not want? Which one do you want? You know, like we can't stop, but they can, like the fact that they are still so focused on like day to day, how do I get better? Or at least that's like forward facing how they present themselves, which I believe that's just all Mark Degnault and Sam Presti driven, where it's just like, how do we continue to stack days and stack possessions and stack? I mean, it is really cool to see it, and it's believable because you see it working. You know, they're 45-19, best record in the Western Conference. You know, the only team that has a better record than them is the Celtics. You know, that's crazy. I mean, that's insane.
It is a bit crazy.
That's insane to think about.
Yeah, and it's also like such a good lesson for anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, don't focus on what happens at the end of the year. If you get a promotion, just work every day mm-hmm. to get that promotion. Mm-hmm. If it comes, you will deal with it later. And if it doesn't, same. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we are projected too much in the future, like starting to taste what it will be like. And not only we kind of risk to make assumptions to what we are and what we do, but we also fail to do the most important thing, which is enjoying what we are doing to get there. And I think that this team really enjoys the path to the end of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly what Nick Gallo is doing at the end of the games is starting to be a thing. But if you, and maybe they are doing it also because it's a thing, but it started as, hey, we really love to be on TV with Nick Gallo, yeah. which is awesome. Nick is an awesome guy. But I mean, yeah. How many times you did see like guys being there, but not really being there. So yeah, getting through the motions. And even Shea, I mean, Shea is the adult in the room, clearly, on these interviews.
Yeah, definitely.
But kind of starting to get into the groove. I mean, he's not laughing or barking or whatever, but he's making comments that he knows will have an effect on the Tulliuses and stuff like that. So it's what I'm trying to say is that, yes, not only the on-court product, it's what it is. And they are, like, great. the attitude where they have 80, 90% of the time, it's the right one. But it's also like the rest, enjoying the small moments that are part of this run. Mm-hmm. And so I really believe that this is incredible for a young coach like Mark Daigneault to being able to make these guys behave the right way. Behave is not the right word, but like to have this group so glued together.
Yeah.
And so compact, connected. This is insane. On top of the great Encore product, of
yeah.
course.
Yeah. I've heard like every press conference and listened to them several times, and like I'm around the team and talking to people, and I can't help but be impacted positively from just being around the organization. And I am like very grateful for that. Like, and it yeah. sounds so cheesy. Like, oh my gosh, it sounds so cheesy, but it's true. It's true. Oh, okay. I wanted
to- and not only you, Andrew. Yeah. Sorry. I'll yeah. just comment briefly. Yeah. I have, I think that Shay is the one who said it to like excel in the most boring thing. I don't remember who said that, but I have it printed
yeah.
on my desk
yeah.
at work.
Yeah.
And I tried to make it my motto every single day. Like, hey, focus on the most boring tasks mm-hmm. and perform them to perfection. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was Presti, not
yeah, I was going to say, this was Sam. Yeah, this was Sam.
Yes, Sam talking, probably talking about Shay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I was talking about Shay. Yeah. He's talking about, he started talking about baseball and how there was a baseball, like one of the best baseball players ever. Like the way that he prepared was like, he was like getting ground balls like before games. And like, yeah. people were like, what are you doing? Like, you're the best baseball player. Why are you getting ground balls? You know? Like that was, I remember this story. But yeah, it's, anyways, shout out to the Thunder. I yeah. wanted to run this idea by you. Because a lot of people just talk about how the Thunder need a big, oh, they're too small. It's not, you know, whatever. Sign Bismack Biyombo. Shout out to Bismack. I don't know how much Bismack's going to play in the playoffs. I talked to Bismack the other day for the first time in person, and he is one of the most delightful people you will ever meet in your whole life, period. He's awesome. He's extremely cheerful, extremely kind, loves to chit-chat. He was great. Loved getting to meet Bismack the other day. However, I wonder
if... He's not good at fasting.
Poor Bismack. That was scary. Like legit scary yeah. watching that on TV. But I wonder about the Jay Will Chet pairing and what you think about it. Because it's something they haven't used a ton this season. Mm-hmm. And Jay Will's been pretty good. And yeah. so I just wonder about him. He's somebody that kind of gets lost in this whole discussion because a lot of people are like, well, which Jalen Williams is it? You know, the good one or the bad one? You know, the one from Arkansas, the one from Santa Cruz? You know, it's just like, all right, can we just stop? Because I do think there's a world where Jalen Williams, Jay Will, can be a player that helps this team in the playoffs. And I wonder if they've been hiding the Chet Jay Will pairing a little bit more. They brought it out a few times over the last week, but I just wonder about specifically that pairing when you're playing against a bigger team and you know what he can do. Because they didn't have him against the Lakers, and I don't know if there was anything that really could have changed the outcome of that Lakers game necessarily. But his versatility as a player, I think, could be really helpful to this team. And I just wonder what you thought about it.
I think that I like that. I like it, especially in certain lineups. I'm not sure I like it with Josh on the court, even if I know that part of the lineups that have Josh on the court are the one with J-Dub, J-Will, J-Dub and Chet. Mm-hmm. So if you have enough spacing, I think that with J-Will, you are getting a little bit of post defense and also paint defense, and you allow Chet to roam freely and be a little bit more of a free safety. For example, a lineup with Dub, Kayson Wallace, Jay Will, Chet, and someone else that can shoot the basketball. Maybe even a lineup with Lou Dort. Like, that lineup can be extremely impactful defensively.
Yeah.
They also used lineups with Kenrich, Jay Will, and Chet, which to me, if it's a night where Kenrich is feeling it, it's fine. You can tell after 10 seconds if he does or not. So trying out those very big lineups with guys that can switch, because Jay Will can switch, maybe not against anybody. Matt Noonan suggests Hayward in the shot. I'm not ready to have Hayward in a already spacing issue kind of lineup. But eventually, yes. So I don't hate it. I think that against certain matchup where you want a little bit of more size and a guy who can withstand contacts, it's something that I will not be surprised to see in the postseason. And I don't hate it, mainly because both Chet and Jay Will can hit shots. Not sure to which degree, but the spacing doesn't really suffer, and Jay Will is not one that will refuse open threes. He will actually be elated to take them. So
yeah, he'll take them.
Yeah.
And we saw him be very successful. You know, he missed a lot. I think it was in the play-in game that they won against the Pelicans, but he hit a huge one down the stretch. And just the willingness to shoot it is really important. And so I just wonder
if Jay will shoot it.
Jay will shoot it. Jay will take a charge. I just wonder about that, just as a look that you may see against, you know, a specific playoff matchups. Like, if they somehow wound up in like the 3-6 with the Kings, I think it's specifically a great lineup for that team, because Chet is not great on Domas, but Jay Will is great on players like that. He was awesome against Bam Adebayo the other night. He's good against Domas, and a guy who just, that's a series that I could see it just not being like the biggest Josh Giddey series and being more of a Jay Will series, you know? If the Thunder played the Warriors, it probably wouldn't be much of a Jay Will series. You know, it'd be more of a Josh Giddey series or more of an Aaron Wiggins series or Kenrich, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, like,
all
of these guys are more situational to a degree, but I do think that a lot of people don't, when they're thinking about the Thunder, they don't really account for Jay Will and what he can be for this team and the ways that he can impact the team. Because I just think he's a really good player. I mean, I just couldn't shake...
He's a good player.
I couldn't shake that watching him the last few games after he came back from injury. He just... One, he looked really spry in that game on Friday. Mm-hmm. And he was impactful yesterday. I just think that guy can play. And I think he's smart. I think he's a good decision maker. If his shooting can come along, man... Like, I think he could be an impactful player for a long time for this team.
And I think that getting Muscala and getting Biyombo are like insurance policies that it would be, I mean, why not to take them? Even if it's for training. I mean, probably it was me and you offline discussing that. Like, what if it's just for like beating Chet every single night for training? Like, he's not super tall, Biyombo, but he's a beefy guy. So trying to just push Chet every single time that he tries to get a rebound, having guys that can do that, so even if and teaching like Jay Will and Chet to do certain stuff. So I don't mind the moves, but I do think that Jay Will is a guy that I want to see on the court. And I want to see in general near this team, because his energy is something different. He's always bringing positive energy to whatever moment on the court is. Mm-hmm. And it's contagious. I mean, a Jay Will charge, it's contagious. It's something that propels a good action. Mm-hmm. And he's a good decision maker. He has juice. He can make passes. He can. He is a functional NBA player. Now, can he be a starter? Probably not. Is he the best to play against a guy like Jokic? Nobody is, but the answer is still no. Can he be serviceable in those matchups? Yes. And this is exactly what OKC needs. If Muscala is on one of those nights where he hits the first few threes, then maybe Muscala is a better option.
Yeah.
But not because Jay Will is not a good option, but sometimes a veteran can be a good option for 10 minutes mm-hmm. in the postseason. Mm-hmm. But I want to see Jay Will getting time. And whether this is a secret weapon or not, I don't know. I think that Degnol used that against Denver in a very deliberate way. Mm-hmm. Say, okay, we need that unit. Mm-hmm. And that unit was successful. So I think that it is on many teams' scouting report that OKC can get to that kind of look. But in the same time, I would not abuse it if I can, because it's something that may work. Mm-hmm. And you may want to give to your opponent something a little bit different mm-hmm. to try. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Other news that affects the Thunder, potentially, is Alperen Şengün is likely to be out for the rest of the season. We don't know that for sure. But the injury looked like a you're out for the season injury. You know, you got 20 games left or whatever. It doesn't seem like he's going to come back. But we'll see. Maybe he does bounce back and it's something crazy and he's young and his legs and ligaments are all fine. We don't know. But it does seem like that's where this is headed. And I don't know that the Rockets are really going to climb all that much in these reverse standings. They could probably pass Atlanta, mm-hmm. who they're tied with at 29-35. Utah, they're pulling all the levers. They are just out there pulling every lever possible. Darius Bazley, let's go. They're tanking big time, and so they're only a half game or a full game back of Utah, and maybe they just end up being worse than Utah because they're gonna play just their young guys, and their young guys are worse than Utah's young guys. I don't know. But it's likely to be in the 8, 9, 10 is probably the highest that it will get. Because then you get to 7, that's where Toronto is. They're 6 games away. Like it's just
too late.
It's not going to happen. So Thunder likely to have probably the 10th pick or the 9th pick would be my guess in this upcoming draft from the Rockets, which is a nice position to be in. I think there are good players in this range for the Thunder. It's wild to think the Thunder could potentially finish first in the Western Conference and also have the 9th pick in the draft. that's just the rich getting richer there. There are players in this draft that I think could be impactful to this team. I think they could find somebody. I don't think there's that's the thing with this draft. There's not some high-level franchise-changing player, but there are a lot of guys that I think could be good role players. One thing that's just so weird about my job is sometimes people walk up to me at the arena and start a conversation as if we're already in the middle of a conversation. And I had one of those on Friday night where somebody came up to me and just said, "Kyle Filipowski can't shoot."
And may probably be accurate since his free throw shooting is not that great, but it's fun that people are.
It may be true. I thought that was really funny. I still like Filipowski quite a bit. If you want to hear our thoughts on Reed Sheppard, who may or may not be in that range, I think he's all over the board. Some people have him at 11. I think Vecini had him 11th in his last mock draft, and then ESPN has him at 4 or 5 or something. I mean, I don't know where these guys are going to go.
Michele has him first by a mile in his mock draft.
If you want to hear it, I haven't published it yet, but I'm going to publish a Dream Team draft show on the OKC Dream Team. If you want to subscribe to that, patreon.com/OKC Dream Team, and you can subscribe and hear that show. But we talk for about 25 minutes about Reed Sheppard and what he could be for the Thunder specifically. And so it
might have been a little bit too excited about him.
Just
a tiny bit.
But it is interesting because I do think the Thunder, they're going to have a lottery pick. They're going to have a later lottery pick in this draft. And, we're going to break that down as we get closer to it. And so, I think it's, It's just a whole other interesting thing there. We got to see a little bit of Usman Jang there. He's another piece that's interesting moving forward. Like what happens with him? What happens with this first round pick? You know, how do they continue to add talent? I mean, it's going to be the rich get richer type of situation. And to me, I think you take another player. I think you take whoever the player is. You're also not likely going to get this Jazz pick. I think the Jazz just couldn't stomach handing the Thunder over the 12th pick in this draft. And so they just decided to just pull the ripcord, and they're going to, I mean, they're also just in a position where they're not going to be able to climb all that much either in these reverse standings.
How much for tanking, isn't it?
It is amateur tank. They're five games behind Toronto at 7. 5 games. They're like, sorry, dude, too late.
Where is Kalazakis? Where is Charlie Brown?
Yeah, come on, guys.
I mean, if you want to take Bazley, take him in November.
Yeah.
If you have the guts. That is how you should tank.
Well, just tank to start the season. You know?
Yeah, just
they're too late. Like, it is so hard. This is them rebuilding from the middle. It's so hard to rebuild from the middle. And maybe this draft.
It's going well.
Yeah, it's going well, but if the path is to contention, it's not going that well.
Nope.
if the goal is to just like be a good team, sure. Yeah.
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 Maybe that is the goal.
I think they can be a good team, but if the path is contention, like they're going to have some crazy, crazy luck on their side, like they did the last team that they rebuilt with Mitchell and Gobert, who were later picks, you know, that just somehow blossomed into stars for them. I mean, they're going to need that to happen again. And, you know, the mindset.
It's Keontae Jordan, Walker Kessler. Come on. Those are there already.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. I don't know. We'll see. But the Thunder aren't getting that pick. It's still likely to convey next year for them.
Top 8?
Yeah, they'll have the chance to get a better pick next year. We'll see what happens. And the West is going to be so freaking tough next year. Because Memphis is likely to be good again. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, chances are that though someone else will drop.
It happens every year. Injuries. It happens every year. Yeah, it happens every year that somebody drops and isn't as good as you think they're going to be. But, you know, San Antonio will be better.
You know, maybe.
Likely will be better. Portland.
Would you try to be better if you're the Spurs?
I mean, I don't know.
Don't you want to take another Wembanyama on your team? Is it 2025 or 2026, his brother?
I think he's 26. Take a
6'8 point guard.
Take the other Wembanyama.
That is, what kind of pick do we have in 2026? The Clippers?
That's the Clippers' swap? Unprotected pick.
Can you imagine?
That would rock and roll.
That'd be not so going to happen. PG will still be the 13 MPP voting.
Sure. Yeah, we have to continue to try to reverse jinx this thing. The Clippers are going to be title contenders still. Obviously. Obviously.
Yep.
All right. Thanks so much for listening to our show. We have another show on Wednesday. Thunder play the Pacers in OKC Tuesday night, and then they play on Thursday night against the Mavs late night. I don't know what we're going to do for that game. Jay's going to be at the game. I'm going to be at the game. I don't know if I want to get up at 6 a.m. the next morning. We need to figure out what to do. I'm planning this in my head as I'm ending the show. I shouldn't do that. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you guys are doing great. We'll talk to you guys again on Wednesday.